Go Loud. Talking Bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your fitness potential with no contract and full class access. FBTGyms.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us. Episode 202 of the Talk of Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud and proudly sponsored by FBT Gyms.
FBT Gyms is the best in the business, giving you so much more than your average gym.
Join us in a supportive environment dedicated to helping you achieve your fitness goals, with locations in Swords, Coolock, Drogheda, and the new location now open in Tallaght.
Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned athlete, FBT provide resources, motivation, and expertise to empower your fitness journey.
Memberships include a free introduction to the gym to get you started.
Unleash your potential at FBT Gym for only €44 a month with no contract and full class access. Sign up at fbtgyms.ie today.
It's me, CLB.
It's me, Terry Flower.
And today we're joined by...
Fred Cook.
Fred.
Cook.
Cook. Well, it is. It's Cook. Because there's an E at the end of it.
Right.
So some people say Cook. I went into Virgin Media maybe 10 years ago and was late in reception and she goes, what's your name? And I went, Fred Cook. And she went, it's Cook. I know my own name. So Joe the Bandit Cooks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you think that without the S at the end of it, Fred Cook. Yeah.
But that's what I call it anyway, though. Yeah. I know you always get pulled up on it. So I'd say Cook that.
Yeah, exactly. Cook, yeah.
Luke.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And yeah. You wouldn't say up. Luke. Yeah. Yeah.
But then you'll get.
Would you
get
have a Luke at that?
Name,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You sound like you're from Drogheda, though. Or Dundalk.
Yeah.
Fred Cook from the town.
I always have people. That's exactly it. I always have people from Louth and they can't, they're not genetically programmed to use their tongues, aren't they not?
Like, how are you? How are you doing?
Well, hey.
like this is a birthday party in Dundalk. Happy birthday, how are you? It's like they've known, happy birthday, how are you? And like, her name's like probably like Jacinta or something like that. Happy birthday, they just can't use their tongues. Going to not. Like, this is probably a lad from Louth going down on his girlfriend. Anyway, thanks for having me.
We're off to a fly off, Fred, yeah?
Where do you go from here?
You're a big fan of Eurovision, I heard.
Do you know, I like talking about it. I think you guys are convinced I know more than I'm letting on. I just know what I've heard.
Fred, any question we've had, you've answered it.
Yeah.
About Eurovision. We were like, where is it this year? You were like, oh, it's in Liverpool. And I was like, are you sure? And you're like, well, it might not be. It might be in here and it might be there.
Yeah.
And I was like, right. And then what you said, how many entrants was on? You're like, there's 1,000 entrants.
Oh, yeah. I did hear that, yeah, on radio. And there's 1,000 songs that were sent forward. And they were all listened to. And then they were filtered down. So if maybe the top 500. And then they're listened to twice. And then you get it down to 5 people on the Late Late Show.
So who decides how it goes down to 5? 1 person?
Yeah, I don't know how to get to that, but... When it gets to that 5, they all perform on the late late and then the public vote.
So that's how it works.
Yeah.
So the Bambi Tug performed when we were on.
The week before.
So why was she on it?
She was...
I don't know. She went back on then, this was like, yeah, this is my life since I knew.
I wonder if she got a vote or if she...
No, they knew she was going to be the representative.
Yeah.
And then she just went on to talk about life, I think.
Oh, was he? Yeah.
Oh, a week after it. So she got in. Oh, she got in and then... The week before it was the competition, then you guys are in the next week.
Yeah.
But when she came in, we were shocked. We hadn't a clue. That with the dress, like. Strutting our stuff.
We weren't watching the late. We're not big on Eurovision. Them two combined the week before, we completely missed that. So we're just sitting there. Bambi Toe comes in, sat down, twirls, for a big huge. In diameter, this thing was about 12 foot, wasn't it, 30? Yes. This thing was huge, twirls, and people are clapping and applauding, and
it's
we were
in
like...
the green room now.
Yeah.
This isn't even on the stage. We're in there trying to rob ashtrays and all, fucking light smokes, and she's coming in with a dead rat and all doing twirls.
I was checking the creases in the telly to see if it was nailed down, because we'll get that out here. She's there doing twirls. I was like, keep doing them twirls, everyone's watching you. When they're rubbing the telly.
Yeah. I'd say with the storm over last week, she was flowing over the Atlantic. Big dress on her, like, you know.
Yeah.
But I had a zinger.
Okay. Is Eurovision related?
No, but it might be now. Actually, I had an announcement as well. We have a big announcement.
I knew it. Yous are going for Eurovision. I knew it.
It might be.
Seriously. Honestly, guys, you'd get the Irish vote. And then, and depending on the power of the melody or the rap, I'm not putting this into a certain... into a certain section here, you know, but you definitely get a free holiday to wherever it's going.
That's what I hope. Somewhere good. You said it's Switzerland, is it? It's in Switzerland this year.
Yeah, I'd that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
A free trip to Switzerland, yeah. But we'll have a big announcement. Stay tuned till the end of the show, probably. Okay. We might let something slip.
Today?
Maybe.
I'm shitting. I didn't even know this. But go on.
So my thing was, if you had to give a 15-minute presentation on one topic, you have to give a 15-minute presentation, what is it? And his is obviously going to be Eurovision.
No, it's not. I haven't a clue with Eurovision, lads. I don't know how. Like, you're just chatting about it. What would you give a presentation?
Fred, you're in here 9 minutes, and you spend 9 minutes talking about nothing but Eurovision.
Yeah,
you're already halfway through this. You're majority way through this presentation. Then you're in the closing notes here. You basically can just come around and say any questions.
Yeah. 15-minute presentation.
Anything in the world, but you have to talk about it for 15 minutes. Anything in the world. What are you picking?
Podcasting.
Yeah.
No, actually, I don't know about.
You're 15 minutes talking about podcasting.
Getting into the logistics and all.
Yeah, 15 minutes. Maybe Eurovision. No. Maybe, I don't know. Michael Jackson. Was mad about him and who else? I was massive. I was as a child. I was a massive fan.
Eurovision to Michael Jackson.
Yeah, yeah. Or the Superman movies. You know, like from 1 to 4.
You'd be some bleeding on a, what's that, Mastermind? You'd be some man for a game of Mastermind, no?
No, I'd be awful. Like, well, I guess I heard at Mastermind that even if you give them your special topic, this is what I heard, that they still give you like $4 because that's where they get their questions from. So you mean, so if you just kind of read through that, you know, you kind of cover yourself.
Mm. Yeah.
So what would you do?
The difference between North Side and South Side Dublin.
That's a great show.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah.
On North Side, we have the Yup Bros.
Yeah.
On the South Side, we have the Yuppies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like Yup Bro, tracksuits, electric scooters. South Side, it's like
Bambinecks.
Yeah, Bambinos, Split the G, Fontaines DC. All this, you know what I mean? All these little subcultures and all. You're like, what are you all at? Like,
yeah.
And then you're like,
no, don't go, what are you at? What are we all at?
No, listen. So this is the dilemma. You're like, what is everyone at? And then you're like, I'm in one of them.
Yeah.
You're like, bollocks.
No, I see you every week over here. You're in the Nike Tech Tracks every single week. No, right.
You're looking at everyone, you're like, look at them, you're making a show yourself. And then you're like, all right, bud. And you're like, how come you didn't say all right, bud, to the fella behind me? He said it to me. You ever get that?
Yeah.
You walk down the road and like somebody had to get fucked out with pennies for shoplifting and they're giving the loads and you turn around and say, what's the story to you? And you're like, you don't know me. And I'm looking around the people and I'm like, I don't know him. I swear I don't know him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're trying to be like distancing yourself. And your man is obviously seeing a friendly face and be like, you know what? He's a tracksuit one as well. So yeah. He must.
Or if English people say love. All right, love.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Like, you're going steady like, on there, pal.
Exactly. Like you couldn't if I said that to a stranger. Like, you know.
Hello, love. I didn't like, say that.
Do you? Love?
Yeah, now there's certain situations where I don't, where you don't think you'll get it. But I'd be like, nice one, love.
And we're like, say it when I'm trying to de-escalate a situation. You know,
relax,
someone's going, relax.
Love.
All right, love.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, love.
Yeah.
And one of them and everyone be like, yeah.
That's another bloke, just a rug.
Yeah.
So, what, love? Yeah. Be a great UFC fighter. Okay, love.
Yeah.
Come on now.
More than kicking off.
Yeah.
But what topic are you picking? Michael Jackson?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe Michael Jackson.
Are you serious?
Well, yeah, I just, because as a child, you know, I kind of grew up with him, like, you know, and so I'd kind of, you know, I'd know a lot about him, you know. So,
do you know what? I don't think we realise how big Michael Jackson was.
That's the thing. So, and there was like, I seen him like
he'd shut down streets if you knew Michael Jackson was going to Brown Thomas today, you couldn't get near. You couldn't cross the Liffey.
But like Dermot Kennedy does that.
No, he shuts down to perform. But I mean, if you knew Michael Jackson was shopping in Brown Thomas, you couldn't cross the Liffey.
He'd just be followed, like.
Yeah.
Sure, hotels didn't want Michael Jackson because it was such a health and safety hazard. People would be climbing up, you know, the gutters and everything, you know, to get a look at him as well in media and
surely
stuff like that.
That's big for, like, promotion. paparazzi and all taking pictures of him in the hotel.
And yeah, with the traffic and all that. Can I give you my Dermot Kennedy story there?
Go on.
He was on the Tommy Tiernan show. This is how much of a superstar.
Was he? I didn't know.
He was singing a song. And so I seen him with my dad 2 days before lockdown in New York. I was in New York on holidays with my dad, and we went to Radio City to see Dermot Kennedy, and it was a great gig, you know. Like, it was. So then I met Dermot Kennedy maybe 3 weeks ago, and I said, you know what, I'm going to tell him, oh Dermot, it was a real privilege, I seen you in New York in Radio City. And you know what he said to me? He goes, oh, I remember that day, give me back the day, it was just before lockdown. Yeah. And then he says to me, do you know what, I love Radio City as a venue, I actually prefer it to Madison Square Gardens because it's so intimate. Yeah. I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Little humble brag.
Yeah. Nobody would, like, it's just, that's his world. His world. It's hard to accept that. It's hard to accept it, but it's hard to kind of, because we kind of remember him from Ireland almost, you know, and now he's just so global, you know. I'd be like, oh, do you know, yeah, I love the Laugh Lunch, but I much prefer the Halfpenny Bar now, to tell you the truth. It's like, you know, it's my look.
I think he lives in New York, doesn't he, full time?
Does he?
I think so. But
be a good guest for the podcast. Just putting that out there. If anybody knows Dermot,
he's around.
Oh, is he around?
Yeah.
See you now and give him a ring there.
Listen, yeah, Dermo, I'll come round to his house there tomorrow.
So. If you want to drop in?
Yeah.
You can bring the guitar if you want, so we wouldn't say no, do you know what I mean?
No, completely, yeah.
But how do we get talking? Oh, Michael Jackson, yeah.
Oh yeah, I could probably, I'd know a fair bit about him, like, you know, so. But I used to think I was a fan until social media, and then, like, some people like the people who imitate him, do you know, like, how, I think through tragic events, you know, the way Michael Jackson changed his face, do you know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel sorry for him.
He changed his whole skin colour.
Everything, yeah.
He had the disease.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, sad disease.
Well, what do you have?
He had some sort of like treatment done to do that now.
What did he have again? He's got this condition. It's called a vitiligo. And it's where the
you're secretly quizzing him.
Yeah.
This presentation would go well. Yeah. Well, go on.
And what he said was, this is what he says, that it kills the pigmentation in his skin. It killed the black pigment. And it kind of happened between Thriller and Bad. So you're looking between 82 and 86. So what he did, what his makeup artist did, her name was Karen, right? So what she did was she would put makeup on his face that would balance out the whole thing. So it got to a period when the white spots were so strong that you'd have to put, you know, a white cream on to balance it, to get the strongest strongest pigments. And but then I think when it came to his pigment was completely gone when it came to around Dangerous. And all that. Oprah said, if you went beside him, you could see the veins through his face. Do you know, he just had no pigment at all. Like, so.
Literally, this is a presentation on Michael Jackson. You knew his makeup artist's name.
Yeah,
now it's impressive. Well, a lot of people think he just got that done for the crack.
I was one of them people.
Yeah, no, like.
Because let's be real, he's not all there.
Oh,
he
wasn't all there. No,
yeah, he was not.
No. And he was in a Pepsi commercial where, like, he badly burned his head. Like, he badly, like, was it third-degree burns into the bone? And so he was always, and what they gave, and he always had this, he had this kind of balloon underneath his skin that they had to open up to spread the skin out. Like, he had immense pain. And that's why he started a lot of medication, you know, right after that, you know what I mean? Just so we could sleep and like painkillers and stuff. And that's how we became addicted to that. Do you know what I mean? And so we kind of lost a part of Michael Jackson after that as well. Like, so, you know, it's tragic. Yeah.
There's this page on Instagram. This is how you know how big Michael Jackson is for us. And it shows like singers singing a cappella.
Yeah.
No music in the background. And that fella. He was talented.
Yeah,
like, talented, I mean, a joke.
There's no doubt he was talented. But I'm just trying to think about his stardom. You know, because I don't think there's anyone alive now.
Who is
comparable to Michael Jackson?
No,
because I remember like people like. Do you remember he done that documentary? He done the documentary where it was like an insight, and your mum was fucking living.
Or Martin Bashir
was it? Yeah. I remember that came out and in my nana's house, and there was 15 people gathered around in the sitting room watching this.
Yeah,
only about 20 years ago.
Yeah,
gathered around watching this. This was fucking groundbreaking, Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
and he's in the studio and he's dancing and all. And that's when he had the Green Giant in his house.
Of course, yeah.
All this
yeah.
shit. And I was like...
That was in LA. He was staying in an apartment in LA like a child.
This yeah. is how big it was. Do you know what I mean?
We're like... fellas, it was 15, eh? Yeah. Hollywood
yeah.
love.
Yeah. It wasn't 20 years ago. It was 19, actually. Yeah. yeah. I remember, like, Taylor Swift is probably the biggest star on the planet now, yeah?
That's it, yeah, yeah.
Now?
Is she?
The same excitement. The same gravitas.
But I mean, like, not, yeah. not even... I'm not trying to compare the two. I'm just saying, who would you say the biggest star is on the planet now? Taylor Swift.
Taylor, yeah.
Is yeah.
Who, yeah, who could, like...
Who else? Who are you putting in that? I'm not trying
I
to...
I don't know. Adele, I would have said or something. But I think that's probably just talent-wise.
Pure stardom, yeah.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What Taylor Swift's tour done? 2 billion or something? Was it more? Yeah. Generated?
That new, but that do you remember she played Croke Park before
and
that?
You couldn't give the tickets away.
You couldn't give the tickets away.
The place
like,
was empty. They couldn't get the tickets away. And that was only just before COVID.
Like, Croke, your time for that was a bit like my hair. The audience were kind of spread out evenly to give an illusion of volume. If you look on YouTube, there's big like, empty spaces.
Well, I remember getting texts for that. Getting texts from people like, go Taylor Swift tickets if you want to go. I was like, no.
So the last time she was over, they opened the Tree Arena up the day before as a shop, didn't they?
Just to do merchandise.
For merchandise. Oh, yeah. It's not crazy, isn't it?
In the men. Yeah. Like, just how it happened, but like, she'd probably be the closest thing to Michael Jackson, and she's nowhere near Michael
exactly.
Jackson.
Yeah,
that's how big he was.
Yeah, yeah,
you know what I mean?
Madness,
but
they started quite young as well, wasn't it? Like, she came from a country family,
there we go,
and he came from Motown, you know, like, so
right, moving on.
Did you pick a topic?
Football, I have to keep it simple. What else am I giving a 15 minute presentation on?
What are you going to do on football?
Liverpool.
Yeah.
Liverpool.
Just the foundation of the club.
Just right the way up. 1892, 2025. What there?
It's good. Yeah, good tactic. Just 10, 15 seconds per year. 1892, they made the club. 93, fuck all happened. 1894, and that's it. By the time you get to 2025, you're laughing.
Yeah, 50-minute presentation. Yeah. Everyone be bothered.
Just 10 seconds per year. You're laughing, Terry.
When did you start supporting them?
Who, Liverpool?
Yeah. Oh, your whole life?
Yeah.
Was that because of your parents?
No, on my own. On my own, the only one in the family.
Yeah, yeah. I tried to support Man United in secondary school just so I could be part of something.
Tried?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you fail at supporting someone?
Exactly, yeah. What did you do? You fail like this. Yeah, I couldn't give a shit. Come on! I'd probably wanted to be liked. Do you know what I mean? And I was spreading myself thin. Do you know? Come on, Cantona. Jeez, I couldn't get word to Michael Jackson. You know, that's what I want right now. You know what I mean? I was more obsessed with music, you know? Yeah. But I probably wanted to be liked by the lads. So
are you
tried
not into football at all, Fred? No?
No.
Never?
Never really. Oh, well, look, you know, I love watching Ireland play. Like, you know, I definitely do. Like, so, you know, every, like, once a year. And it's, but...
You're not into sport at all, Fred?
I tried to play squash. That's my thing. I love the intensity of squash because it's just so quick. Do you know what I mean? And you have to, thing I like about squash is you have to stop, you have to focus on it. You can't be thinking about anything else, you know? Even with football, you can take a few breaths, you know what I mean? And adjust yourself and go back in. But with squash, there's just no time to...
squash is?
Squash, it's like, you know, racquetball. In a racquetball court. So if you just take the sizing down.
Do you know paddle?
That everyone's playing now. That's the new thing,
isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
That's where I was going to go with this. So a friend of mine is trying to get me out to play paddle. And he said,
that's massive. You're set to me today as well.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be unreal for your cardio. Like you think you're fit and then you play paddle, is what he was saying. And I was like, right, I'll give it a back.
Do you know why? Because the ball is so dead that you have to run for it. you have to run for it. Like.
Well, isn't squash just one wall?
It's you're inside of it with a glass sheet wall in the back. So so if you get really good, you know, you can start hitting it from the back of the wall up. You know what I mean? Like, but that's, I heard guys go. I played squash once with a woman who's European champion, and I was like, oh, where did I go wrong there? And she's like, you should never make those mistakes happen in the first place. You know, she was so good. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that when you, I think the better you get at squash, the easier it becomes to watch. Do you know what I mean? Like, because you should never really, when you're receiving a serve, you should never really let it bounce. You should just try and get it straight to the wall as quick as you can, because it's that intense. You're giving the person space to adjust themselves to attack you, you know. So it's,
15 minute presentation on squash now.
Squash, yeah. But definitely for the cardio. Now, I'm based in Dingle at the moment, and there's no squash court, so I haven't. But we've got that other sport, and it's massive.
Paddle,
yeah.
And it made it's had to take it over the world.
Oh, it's crazy, yeah.
But you know what's mad? It's had to take it over the world. I haven't seen it. I've only heard of it.
There's one in Talla, I think.
Yeah. It's out. Yeah.
And there's Irish championships as well, isn't there?
But it's a myth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just one of these things.
It's like High Rocks.
No, but you see High Rocks. You go to the gym, you see cunts doing it. You know what I mean?
No, but I mean, it just popped up one day.
Yeah.
High Rocks, Taylor Swift and Paddle.
No.
They've all just come up out of the cracks in the wall.
It's a UFO.
It's Bitcoin.
People tell you it's real. People tell you UFOs are real and on. You're like, I'll believe it when I say it. Same with Paddle.
But UFOs are unidentified flying objects. So they have to be real. Do you know what I mean? When someone says UFO, it doesn't necessarily mean alien. Do you know, if there's a weather balloon, do you know that you don't know what it is? That's a UFO at that very moment.
So maybe I'm down in the gym and there's cunts playing paddle and I just don't realise, oh, that's paddle that they're playing.
Exactly,
Could be. I'm going to give it a bash because I heard it's challenging, but like, you know, when people say stuff is hard and then you give it a bash, that's not that bad. But like,
I'm jealous of you guys because you guys play sport for the love of sport.
Yeah.
And I do as well, but I also play sport to try and keep the weight down.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You look like a big rugby man, Fred.
Oh, you're very kind.
That's very kind. Yeah.
I'm probably a big rugby man to be in the pub after the Six Nations. Like, you know, that's what rugby is, I guess.
Telling people to shush and all in the pub.
I was never, and I don't mean this against my parents, but we were never that sporty of a family. Do you know, like, especially when something like rugby or even soccer, there's something that's a bit, they're looked after. There was rugby additions in my primary school, and I went to them wearing my mom's cowboy boots, do you know, and ran up and down the pitch, a wet pitch, do you know what I mean? I was just filling time, do you know, because that's where my mates were going. But the fact that I'd no proper, you know, gear or anything like that, you know, was so we were never a sports family, and I've no hand to eye coordination whatsoever. I'm good on the guitar, I'm good on the piano, and like one time we had to do, do you know, in PE in primary school, and I used to do the trials for the football team, and you had to do them even if you didn't want to do them, you had to do them. And one day, we still talk about this at Christmas time. We were doing Gaelic, the trials for Gaelic. I was 12, and there's a ball coming my way, and I panicked because people are claiming their pass straight away before you give it to them. I didn't know what to do with the ball, and I headed it into the goal like that. And it went in, back of the net, and everyone started cheering, like, you know, like, and I didn't even know you weren't allowed to use your head in Gaelic, like, so, and I never forget the teacher, like, get my arm near me, ripping me off the pitch, like, stop taking the piss. I was like, I'm not, I just don't know, you know, I don't know how to play this game, like, so.
Yeah, right, Fred, what we do with every guest, take us back to the start, where are you from, what was life like growing up for you?
It was great, loads of freedom. I was born in 1980. And in Meath, I was trying to explain to American people last week, had a few drinks with me, and what I wanted to say was the same kind of question, where are you from? I was trying to explain where Kells was in relation to Ireland. So I said, oh, I grew up in the east of Ireland, but also to the middle. But what I said by accident was like, I grew up in the Middle East. They felt all apologetic. Oh my God, I'm so sorry what's happening at the moment. You know, it's like, oh, listen, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Like, I've been occupied by Navin people the whole time. God. You know, so.
Then show them the map and say, look, there's a Westmead. There's no Eastmead.
Oh, yeah. Just Mead. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there used to be an Eastmead.
Yeah.
Until.
That's
until
the sea.
We won't talk about that anymore. until the feud.
Yeah. There'll have to be an East and a West Dublin, you know, like to cut down on the football teams, open up the competition again. That's what they're talking about.
But then the All Ireland final will be East and West Dublin.
Yeah. In Croke Park. Yeah.
Siobhan's giving me dirty looks. All right, Siobhan, we know Galway made it to the final last year. And who won?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
So I grew up in Kells and I had so much freedom. Do you know, I lived in an estate in Kells, and you know, we were just allowed to. We went home when the floodlights came on. Do you know, that's the crack. And mom and dad, if we went looking for me, they would find my blue bike outside the house some random house, and I was in people's houses. I don't know whose houses there were, and having dinner. Like they didn't even have kids. Do you know what I mean? Like they didn't even have kids, and then you'd hear mom like I'd go home for dinner, and like I'd be like, mom, I'm after having an Indian with that Indian family up there. You're fine. I'm like 6 years of age. Listen, check the Chinese down there. Lovely couple up there in the back. Listen, I'm grand for those potatoes today. Thanks, mom. You know, so much freedom. And like I remember once mom and dad, I was talking to my babysitter recently, and this was like she's still not my babysitter obviously, and but she used to babysit me in the 80s, and one evening she had her mom and dad brought her in, and we're sitting there watching TV. so dad went to the pub with mom for a few drinks in a pub called Jack's. All the parents go there, like, and the babysitter was in there, and she brought her boyfriend in. So they were sitting on the couch, and I was sitting on the other seat, you know, and then she sent me to the shop to get sweets for them, right? To get stuff for them, right? So even though she was babysitting me, I walked by the pub that my dad was in. I could hear my dad inside the pub. No, like, and so the babysitter sends me into town to get stuff and come back, you know? And it was like, so it was just crazy freedom, you know, and no real rules. But I was lucky, you know? I was looked after, you know, more than I even realized, you know? Because there was a community as well. Like everyone knew each other. And now, you know, I was walking by the estate last month, and a lot of retired couples, that's what happens to these estates, isn't it? Yeah. Retired, and, you know, people like myself, we've moved out, you know, so it's very lucky. And then we moved the other side of the town into the countryside. And for me, that was so intense, because that was like, you know, that was like taking my... You know, it took me 7 years to build this up, to know where my mates are and to know where to hang out and all this stuff. So for that to be taken away from you, you know, it was kind of hard for me because I had no one to hang out with. Mm. No one to hang out with. And except we had neighbours down who came a year later and stuff. But that was, you know, if that was my problem in life, you know, life was pretty good.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I was very lucky.
The simple things.
Exactly, yeah.
When did you start getting into comedy?
I could argue, like, I always love making people laugh. Do you know, even, I remember in High Infants, you know, but it was all Robin Williams looking at Mork and Mindy and all that kind of stuff. Just silly sounds and doing faces. I'd do anything to get a laugh, and I never took anything seriously. Like it really, I'd bite the bullet in school just to get a laugh. If it meant that, you know, like they're going to talk about me the next day, I'd do it, you know. And I was never that much of a rebel, you know. I was never a cool kid, you know. As I said earlier on, I pretended to support Man United so I could fit in. Mm. So I probably spread myself a bit thinly, you know. And looking back, I wish I hung out with lads. Remember, there's a quiet group from Leitrim, we were sound, but they never had anything to prove. Looking back, I wish I hung out with them more, you know, but I was just always, no, I'm going to try and hang out with the cool gang the whole time. And so comedy... I always kind of wanted to do it. And growing up for me, like the first of the alternative Irish acts would have been Deirdre O'Kane and Tommy Tiernan. And because Tommy is from Meath, from Navan as well, like, you know, 10 kilometres down the road from my house, you know, we were watching him on Channel 4. And Channel 4 was massive back then in the 90s. And it was, so we couldn't believe it, you know, this is like one of our own. So that was inspiring.
Mm.
Then, you know, I seen him do a show in the Yard Boyne in Navan. And it was the best performance I've ever seen, ever, ever. It was amazing from the second he came on to the second he left, like an hour and a half of like just jokes, jokes, jokes. I remember working with Tommy on one thing once, and he said to me, he goes, Fred, everything has to be funny. Every line has to be funny. Like, there shouldn't be any space for, like, either the line is going to the funny or it's funny in the line itself.
Mm.
And when I seen him that night, you know, like, it always reminds me of that. Like, it was just bang, bang. How does he get so much in it, you know? And because I fell for the craft of stand-up. I fell for Tommy being such a natural with a storyteller, not realising the work that he puts into all the little jokes, you know. And same with Billy Connolly, I fell for that. I was going, oh, I'd love to do that. I'd love to. I'm going to be a comedian. And it was so naive of me. Like, I remember doing a show, the audacity of me. Like, I used to be a lifeguard in the swimming pool in Kells, and we went to a staff party, right? And I was telling people I'd love to do stand-up at this stage, right? So we went to the Christmas party and this comedian came on, who was a one-liner, and he was struggling. Like, the sound wasn't good. And in my head, I was like, God, he's a bit shit, isn't he? Like, Joe, you know, he's a bit shit. Putting up my eyes, looking back. And I knew the guy who booked him, the band, and they asked me, Fred, I went to him, God, he was kind of shit, wasn't he? And then they said, well, would you like to do it? I said, yeah, I'll see you tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And I put a tie on me, you know, and a suit. And I went out the next night, do you know, with nothing. Like, and it was and that was the moment I realised, oh my God, I've completely fallen for the genius of these guys.
You have to talk me through this. So they say, right, tomorrow night you're coming in.
Yeah.
What did you go in with? Had you got material?
No, nothing really. I was kind of going, I'm going to be like Jason Byrne. I'm going to, whatever in front of me, that's the mad thing that's going to happen. And then I walked out, it's just 60 people eating their dinner. Look at you there. You know, and I was trying to give it all this, but there was nothing there. Like, there was no
material.
I remember I was watching Coronation Street earlier on that day, Sally Webster, and I was going, God, she's such a pain to listen to sometimes. I was like, I'm going to give out about her. I'm going to give it and get a laugh. And I walked on and went, oh, what do you think of Sally Webster? And I went, I couldn't give a shit. Yeah. Well, fair play to you now, you know. And I remember the lady paid me. She gave me, it was in Sharky's Hotel. She gave me 130 euro.
That's a good gig.
In an envelope. And it was my mate's 21st. And I got, but I remember getting the money and I felt so like the crying game. Oh, what have I done? You know, like it was kind of even putting the money in my pocket. And I went, got a taxi from Virginia and me to Erzincavin, Cavan, Virginia, and to the 21st in GAA Centre, and sat down beside my mate and went, oh God, what was I thinking? I'm never doing comedy again. And it took 5 years, 6 years. You know, I went to college and got involved in society.
What you doing?
And then music. So I have a music degree, like analysing, well, it's a musicology degree. It's kind of analysing music through the years, through society and how that affected music and vice versa. And so it was only then. And after that, I always remember I tried to approach comedy with care, you know, and realise that it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's stand-up is hard. It's great fun. It's all rewarding, but it's hard.
It's an easy thing to throw out there, isn't it, about comedy? Saying, I could do that. Oh.
Yeah, I know.
It's so easy to not understand how much goes into it. But especially at the highest level.
Yeah.
I know you're speaking about Tommy earlier, but when you're talking about the likes of Tommy Turner and even
Amazing. Yeah, amazing. Mm. But Will, I think, was great from the get-go.
Yeah.
He'd gifted a gab from the get-go. Mm. I really think...
Good Ballymun, man. That's what that is.
Yeah, yeah. And Tommy always had about Dylan Moran that he arrived. Dylan Moran arrived as a comedian. Do you know, he was what he was from the get-go. And rarely that happens.
Yeah.
And I think maybe people from the East, Navin or Dublin as well, you kind of have to... You talk about the gift of the gab, but you kind of need it as a defence. Don't you? You need to be honest.
Because Rob's getting stopped by the police.
Yeah. It's a hard gig. Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
You had to be ready to rush
in the ground at all. It's a tough one.
I think that's where Willie gets it.
Yeah. Years of experience. But you know, another thing people don't realise, it's funny to be, it's easy to be funny in front of your mates.
Oh, completely.
Because you're expected to be funny. You know what I mean? You're the funny fella. You're going to do this. Oh, it'll be Friday night when he gets a few drinks in and we'll do this. When we're in the gym and we're getting dressed, he's going to make a few jokes. Yeah. He's going to do that. But then you grow up in front of 100 strangers and be like, right, go ahead.
Completely, yeah.
Walk away there.
Yeah, well, it's mad, isn't it?
That's how people die.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And sometimes you think, why am I doing this? Like, why do I need to be validated by strangers? It's like if you're doing a marathon and you're the last 5K, what am I doing this? Do you know what I mean? Like, why am I putting myself... And it's not like I do quite well now. Do you know what I mean? I enjoy it. And I've a bit of a fan base come to see me to know my style. And I've got over that. And but you still have to turn over stuff. You still have to... And sometimes, like, it just takes a while. Takes a long time.
But even if you have people following you who are a fan of you, you're still always going to have strangers as well.
Yeah.
There's still people who's going to be coming along and you have to impress them. And your fans will get the jokes and how you go on. The next person is a stranger. They're like, make me laugh now.
I think, and the thing is, the assumption that I have with me in the audience, and I still struggle with it. Like I come up with this material I did in Wicklow last week, and it was new. And I thought, you know, like the audience might know me from the Tommy Tiernan show, and the audience might know me from Dancing with the Stars. They don't.
Yeah.
Like people don't. A lot of people don't watch RTE. You know.
Mm.
So my whole joke was, oh, the RTE, which is true. The TV license guy called around to my house to find out if I had a TV license. And the whole joke was like, do I have a TV license? This. Why don't you ring Tommy Tiernan and find out if I have one, you know? You know? And it was a dancing away to jail. Dancing the Stars away to jail. That's where I'll be. You know? And then the silence comes down and I go, actually, I don't have a TV license and I can't even afford to watch myself, yeah. You know? And the mirror halfway up the stairs feels like a dodgy box. You know? Oh God, I can't even, you know? But I realised halfway through doing that joke, the audience don't even, it doesn't work because the audience don't even know that I'm on TV.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They don't, like some of them do, a certain percent. And if I do my own show, like most of the audience do. So I'm constantly like, when you're writing a joke, sometimes Seinfeld says that the premise has to be so strong, but you don't want to give too much, because if you give too much of the way, you give away the joke. Do you know, but if you give too little, people haven't a fucking clue what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So you're constantly editing for one little joke. You know, you're constantly doing that kind of stuff.
I nearly got fucked out on one of your gigs before.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
It was just
it wasn't your, well, it was your fault.
Was it?
It was in the laughter lounge. Now, this is you.
Now, this is why it took me so long to get onto this.
Yeah. He's blacklisted.
You are bad.
Yeah. He's blacklisted.
Yeah.
It was about 10 years ago. You were on the laughter lounge. I mean, when we made twins. And you were playing like a flute or something. And you
melodicas,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about?
The two melodicas at the same time.
Yeah. And you'll go, shout up suggestions, I can play any song in the world, right? Yeah. And I'm saying, this for any song in the world and this and these plastic, yo.
Yeah.
And I shouted, never going to give you up, Rick Ashley. No, I said, never going to give you up. And he goes, right. And I goes, by Rick Ashley. And you're like, yeah, no, fucking sings it. But then the security guy come behind me and grabbed me.
No
and goes, yeah, no more of fucking that. And I was like, are you for real? I was like, he kept saying show a suggestion.
Well, that is funny.
He thought I'm
sorry about
you.
That. I am sorry about that.
Yeah.
And you didn't get kicked out, did
no,
you?
No, but like then you blasted out the tune, fair enough.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm impressed.
You were impressed.
I was impressed with him. I was like, your man behind me's a prick.
And you weren't even allowed to go, well done, because your security was there.
He was like,
oh God.
Any more of that and you'd be out and all. I was like, are you for real? He literally said shout up a suggestion.
All he had to do, I think the security in the laughter lounge, you know. I think sometimes they're the luckiest, because when you look at security around Dublin City, coppers, you know, along the quays, the security in the laughter lounge, all you have to do is this, shh, that's it, you know what I mean? Like, and just send that message, you know?
So you always get someone out of hand, especially in the laughter lounge.
Yeah, but that polices itself though, doesn't it? It's like, yeah, go on, be the brave man who shouts at the comedian, the one part in the room who has a microphone.
Yeah.
He's going to lift you over.
Well, I did. In all respect, I did open it up to the room, didn't I? I do.
You said shout up suggestions. Yeah. I can play any song in the world, and I did. Yeah. And your man goes, any more than you're out. And do you know what? He gave me a fright because he came behind me and grabbed me on the shoulder. And I was like, oh, and he's like, any more than you're out. And I was like, are you for real?
Yeah, but I think
I'm going to give you tickets next time we do Laugh Lounge. I'll sort you out with tickets. So.
You owe him them for fuck's sake. You got assaulted over you. I was saying there. At our shows, they police themselves.
Ah, yeah.
We always get one or two hecklers that keep roaring up. They've had a few too many, and I'm like, I know they're just having a good night.
Excited.
People beside them are like, you shut your mouth. You can see them all.
It gets intense.
I'll have more on the front row and I'm just carrying on.
It'd be like this. It'd be like, and then I hear people getting smart over there and I just turn this way.
Just pissing the show off.
And so, how are you getting on?
Sometimes, like, because that's not even a heckle, isn't it? That's just someone going, well, how many drinks do you want? How many? And then sometimes I heard Chris Rock when he played the Olympia. Sometimes you have to break out of your character, what you're doing, to acknowledge that energy.
Yeah.
Because the whole audience can see it. I heard when Chris Rock, now I heard this, so I don't know if it's true or not, right? But I think it is. I heard that Chris Rock.
We hope
Chris
it is.
Rock, I heard, because Chris Rock, he didn't break out of his material. You know, this is the stuff that you've paid for, and it was in Olympia. There's a lot, because you're in Olympia, just in between the front row and the stage. And there's a lot carrying maybe 10 pints in a tray, you know, and it's smashed by accident, hammered. fuck, smashed. Do you know, everywhere. Like the whole theatre could see it. Do you know, the whole theatre could see it, and Chris Rock. Now, let me tell you about my life, everybody. You know what I mean? He didn't even acknowledge it. You know, So you kind of, I think, and when people heckle you, the reason why they're heckling you is because they want attention.
Yeah.
So fair enough. So maybe ignore it the first time if you want to, because you're already winning. They realise, this lad's not going to, I'm not going to get anything off this guy. But if they heckle you the second time, you kind of have to go in on it. You have to. And what I've learned is that if you can ask, and you can use this outside of stand-up, you know, if you ask people a question, you know, in kid shows, when presenters are interviewing kids, and they always ask the question where they can't answer yes or no. Like if they come off a roller coaster, what was your favorite part of the roller coaster and would you go back and do it again? Do you know, because the initial, we all have this, that we don't want to answer a question, so we'll just go to yeah, no. Yeah, no, we'll just say yes or no. So you have to ask that heckler questions where they can't answer yes or no. So you make them be informative with the answer.
Yeah.
And you keep doing that. And like five questions in, they'll hang themselves.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the time. And you're in charge of it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like you're putting it to them. Like, so.
Yeah.
But thankfully, I don't even have my, I'm so high octane in my show that I don't even allow heckles to get in.
Yeah.
You don't have time, like, you know, so.
To be honest, before we ever even forced the show, people were saying to me about hecklers, and I always thought it would be worse than what it is.
Yeah.
I don't mind.
Some of them are a blessing.
Well, yeah, yeah, some of them are someone will say something, and you have a response waiting, and you hit them with that, and it's gold, and you're like, you know, delighted you shout up.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, nobody ever, we haven't had a bad one.
No.
Where anyone over
you get people are just a bit excited, but as you said, it does police itself. Like someone beside
it's
them settled. Will tell them to
it's
be quiet.
Settled, I remember I was gigging in Trafalgar Square on Paddy's Day. And it was the most strangest thing. I was playing the two melodicas, like you said. And what it is, I'm blowing into two instruments at the same time. And I'm putting the bass on the left hand and the treble on the right. And trying to, you know, come up with a song on the spot that's been requested by the audience member. And it's hard to do, do you know what I mean? But I've done it so long, I can do it. And so I was into the second request. And there was an English guy up the front. And he put his hand up and he goes, "Sorry, mate. Well, I really like what you're doing, right? But would it be easier just to play one?" You know, he had no concept of struggle or the crack in struggle. That, you know, like you make it hard for yourself and then it becomes funnier. Well, no, it's very good, mate. I really like it. You know, it would just be easier if you play one. You know, yeah, good man, good man. And he genuinely thought he was helping.
Yeah.
You know, like, so, and that wasn't even a heckle. It was just a.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was not a heckle, was it?
So there's plenty of comedians out there who do whole shows just interacting with the crowd.
Yeah. Who's your man, Paul Smith, isn't it?
Paul, and your man, the American fella, Matt Rife.
Kind of, do you know who's one of the best that I've seen? And I have to be honest, Joe Dowling.
Oh, he's amazing.
Fuck me, man.
Well, but we went to see Will Az and I thought your man was going to be waiting outside for him.
Well, hell,
goal. Did he go in?
Never, he went in and then he was backstage after it. So he opened, and then, you know, there's an intermission then with Will Az. So we went in to see Will Az before he came on and I was like, oh, Joe, that was funny. Don't go out there. You stay in here for the whole night now.
And that's what he said.
What
did Joe say?
Oh, he went
he said something about him being fat. But your man was kind of joking for all of it. But then Joe would always, he'd say a joke and he'd just refer back to your man then.
Yeah.
But it was funny. It was hilarious. But your man did look annoyed by the end of it. So we were like, you're probably going to get hiding out there.
Yeah.
But I went to see Will Art again in the Olympia there a couple of months ago and Joe opened for him and he didn't do any jokes.
Has he learned?
No. I mean...
Oh, he didn't tell jokes.
He just lit down.
He just
all off the cuff.
Yeah.
It was like 15 minutes of improvising.
Yeah.
And it was comedy gold. I was like, that's one of the most impressive things I've ever you know, but he's really one of them blokes.
Just go in to slag people for 15 minutes.
He just comes out with a point in his hand and a Cockspur teeth tracks. Licking people. You know,
it's like he just came from his gaff, isn't it? And he's just naturally funny. And he is naturally funny. Brilliant.
It's some blading skill to have. It's some skill to go onto a stage anyway. Yeah. I think the balls it takes.
I heard your man Paul Smith just does 90 minutes of that.
Yeah, but I heard.
Now, I could be wrong, but someone told me they went to see him at the Point recently. He was only on there not too long ago. He'd done two nights in the Point.
Yeah.
Someone went to see him. He said it was 90 minutes of him just back and forth, and he was dragging it out with some people. He'd be like, What's your name?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, Fred.
Yeah.
What are you saying? And it's like, Fred.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, look at you, Fred. And he's dragging it out with people. And it was like, after the fourth or fifth time, you're like, mate, will you tell a story or something?
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But if the energy's not there,
yeah.
not there, and you can't. you can't, you know, bring to life a dead horse. Yeah. And it's not his fault. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes energies, they're not there.
Yeah.
It's always good to go, if you're going to do an hour show, I think, it's always good to start low and end high, because if you start high and it's not there,
you know,
it's awkward.
It's down.
Exactly.
No, I went to see someone who's seen him last year or the year before, and they said a lot of it was actually stand-up material.
Yeah.
And it wasn't great. The stand-up material wasn't great. The best part was him improvising.
Yeah.
So, maybe it's come full. It's flipped.
Yeah, maybe.
It's like you expect it now, and it's like, it's hard to do this all the time. I have to be off the cuff.
Yeah,
you know.
But what Instagram seems to have legs with is all that interaction.
Yeah,
with comedians and audiences now, isn't it?
You know, Matt Rife.
He's
excellent.
But like any time I've ever seen him, I've never seen him tell a joke.
Yeah.
It's all crowd work.
But see, he's handsome as well, and the women love him. Yeah. So like they're all trying their bras up.
And his name, I've done as well,
but I do jokes as well. Like,
but with him, that's like his thing now, isn't it? So people know when he's coming to your town, it's like, I'm gonna throw my bra at him.
Yeah.
You know, they know that.
It's like you see them, they're all little cowgirls now. They're all the late 60s getting them flirt, man.
And he's not afraid to put all his material up.
How easy is that for him, handing it to him.
The women love him so much, they're shouting,
he's always going to have something.
Do you see him when he just be slagging people in wheelchairs and all? Like, I remember there's one of them, a woman is terminally ill, and he's giving a stick, and he's like, don't worry, this won't last much longer, like whore and all. But he puts all that out there,
doesn't care.
Do you know what I mean? He's not
fearless.
It's like it's a joke.
Do you know what I mean?
The woman is laughing at her, gets a selfie with her then. No problem.
It's rare you see somebody actually get offended.
But they're
usually a fan of them.
But that could go out on the internet and people could get offended, not the person who's
always
the
way.
You know,
always
the
way.
Yeah,
internet like so, and a lot of people who go to gigs, especially maybe like for the first or second time, their only experience of stand up is television.
Yeah,
and like stand up live is not TV. Do you know what I mean? And it should be a safe space.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Now, do you know, I often feel you have to look at someone's intent. Why they say the joke and the context as well is so important, you know. Like, but do you know, like that? I've actually heard a few comedians who were like kind of out and out racist in my days, you know, like kind of maybe support me and stuff. And I'm like, you know, like it's not. This is just shite.
Yeah, so more so not even. You're offended. It's just a bad joke sometimes.
Exactly. The jokes are shit.
I've seen so many stand-up comedy gigs, and sometimes someone will say something that people go, "Oh, that's on the edge," and I just go, "It's actually just a shit joke."
I laugh. I don't give a fuck
what it is. Yeah. If it's funny, I laugh. Yeah.
There's no point putting shock. There's no point putting shock there if there's no joke.
Yeah.
Back it up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's almost just a racist thing.
Yeah. Kevin Bridges has a good one. Do you know when he says like a joke that's on the line and everyone doesn't know where to laugh? He goes, a few people checking for the offside flag bell. You don't know whether you can laugh or not.
Yeah, Siobhan, cut that out. This way, using this at the next live show. VAR, racist.
But touching on that, I went to see Tommy. Did you have to put your phone in the yoke when you went to see?
Yeah.
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 Well.
I think it was just after the whole scandal.
Do you reckon that? Is that?
Yeah.
Is that because of that?
Well, the audience enjoy it more.
Yeah.
As well. And I think I feel Tommy, he plays on stage. He'll be writing jokes on stage and banging them, you know. And,
yeah.
He loves improvisation and he loves in the moment. That's how he loves working on the show. He doesn't know who the guests are. And I think when he's on stage doing stand up, he'll be playing with a joke, he'll be storytelling and he'll be adding bits and saying first thought, best thought, put it out there, you know.
Mm.
But if there's cameras there, the freedom of that's kind of taken from you, you know what I mean? Like, because you'll put up those few seconds with no context behind it or anything like that. So he definitely, but I know. The first guy to do that in Ireland was Kevin Hart, and when he was gigging in Ireland, and he was there was a Northern comedian supporting him, and Colin Geddes his name, big guy, very good, and he was going, oh, that's so cool the way. Now this was in the arena up in Belfast, and he was going, that's so cool, I'm going to do that now, I'm going to get the audience to put their phones in pockets and all that. And then he asked Kevin, how much does it cost, or the agent, and he says it costs around 10 grand, you know. And he went, I might just tell the audience to turn their phones off. Then you know, do you mind just turning your airplane mode at least?
Yeah.
How much it costs? Yeah,
I think so. That's what he said. It costs €2 a bag. You know what I mean? Like €2 a bag.
Yeah, it's a good deal. Come in, like,
bad. Yeah. But so it's, and you
so
know
that's
you
how much Tommy has given.
Probably, yeah.
That's how you know the man has money now, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's not even willing to take the risk of something.
He's doing fucking Vicar Street every blading night as well.
Yeah.
Do you know, I've never seen him one night only in Vicar Street. No, he's on massive, the next fucking 15 nights in a row.
A whole run of the month.
Yeah.
Colin Murphy used to say every time he did Vicar Street, he went, oh, it's lovely to be here gigging in Tommy Tiernan's living room.
Yeah.
You did it that time. I remember with Joanne McNally doing 50 nights, and you were like, yeah, Joanne McNally's upstairs making a cup of tea and all, you know. She done 50 odd nights, did she? 60 nights? It's a
brilliant, isn't it?
She had the record, didn't she?
Yeah, she's the record for the most Vicar Streets in 1 year.
Fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
That's some guy, it's some blade bread she's had to walking away with.
Oh, completely, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And she was doing other gigs as well. Remember, she'd be like, she'd be in Vicar Street for a week and then she'd be in Dunleary then. And,
yeah.
You're down in Dingle now.
Yeah.
How'd you end up down there?
Well, a week before lockdown, my wife and I says, look, we'll go down to, her auntie had a place in Dingle, in Brandon, just literally halfway up the mountain. And we said, let's go down there because we have some writing projects to finish. And so we just, and then lockdown happened. So we ended up there anyway for those few months. And we had a child as well. Like Julie, I knew Julie was pregnant. So in February, and so we decided, you know, we were very lucky that the whole first year lockdown was her being pregnant, and then the second year really was, even though it's 9 months, I know, but and then the second year was you know, Ted being one, so we just ended up there by accident, and we're still there now, like, so it's mad. I've a joke about it. I say that you know. I kind of ruined it there saying that it's compromise, isn't it? Being in a relationship, it's constantly trying to find a middle ground until the day one of you die. Like, I grew up in Kells, County Meath, and my wife grew up in Dingle and Kerry. So, to love and compromise, I'm now living in Dingle and Kerry.
Yeah,
and that's the way it is. Like, yeah. So it's, but it is, I love it down there. I do. It's, we live in the town. The kids, like Ted, my he's 4 years of age, and he goes to Nínera, like, you know, a play school there, and he's speaking Irish, which is lovely, you know,
because
I'm so shit at Irish, so it's great to see it. He has I've mentioned this to a few people, because, and you notice it, he's a Kerry accent now, 4 years of age, so for Meath, man, you really notice it. He sounds like Danny Healy Ray, like, in the morning, like, he's there with his cornflakes. Daddy, you're a long way from home, you are, daddy. Daddy, you're off. Daddy, I've seen you come out of the shower. You put on a lot of weight. You have, daddy, daddy. I don't know if you're a boy or a girl, daddy. I don't know. You know, he's just way little Healy Ray heading him, you know.
And the Healy Ray heading him.
He's a cap and all on, does he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Daddy, go back to the fairies in Mead and tell them Ted Cook sent you. Good luck to you now. So. And of a 1 year old, and he's like me, he hasn't a clue what's going on. It's great. Like, he just wakes up like this, happy days. And I think my 1 year old has my organization skills, because he thinks he's organized, but he's not. Like last week, he's 1 month, and he's 1 year and 4 months, and he's starting to walk now. And last week, he was like, do you know what I'm going to do? He's in the sitting room on his own. I'm going to take that remote control TV remote, and I'm going to put it upstairs in the shelf beside Dad's passport that he doesn't know about. That makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, so he's constantly kind of just putting shit different places. And like, I'm very lucky. I do know in 20 years time I will look back and go, God, that was a lovely time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very much in the moment. The traveling is mental.
Yeah.
But you know, like, there's not a podcast I haven't listened to. And Julie's very understanding. She's a comedian as well.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So like, it's so Google Calendar is important. You know, I'm the blue dots and she's the red dots. And like, if I'm asked to do a gig, you know, it overlaps a lot. But so, you know, we just have to be so organized.
How did you meet Julie?
We did a gig in Null.
I'm glad that was true comedy, because if it hadn't been true comedy, it would have been a letdown.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we went to college together, a childhood sweetheart. And I'm like,
No.
I went on stage and I died, and then she went on stage, she killed it. That's what I want.
No, that didn't happen the other way around. But
yeah.
But we did, yeah. And we just met, we just started hanging out, and then Joey dated us, and so yeah, that's the way it worked, like, so. It is good because I'm very lucky as a comedian now that I've professionally got so far. I think I was only saying it to another comedian today, especially when you've got two kids, and it'd be very hard for me to turn around to Julie and go, do you know what I'd love to try? Stand-up comedy. I'd love to give that a go. Do you know, which would mean doing open mics, you know, on a Saturday night in Mayo or Cork, or, you know, trying to establish yourself. I feel so lucky I've got beyond that. Yeah. You know, like I'm professional now. And so, stand-up gives me a bit of independence as well. Do you know, I love going home and seeing the kids, but I also love putting on my Bluetooth speaker and hitting the road. Yeah. You know, as well. Like,
get a little break.
Completely.
Yeah.
And there's no guilt because you're working, do you know? Yeah. And I'm lucky Julie's fine with that. So.
Do you still get nervous enough for gigs? Yeah.
Not as much. Absolutely. I do. Yeah. I do, but not as much. It shows that you care if you're a bit nervous, you know. I think confidence is a dangerous word in stand-up. Like, you know, because you can be confident, but then if you get a bit too confident, you can be the wrong side of it and you've lost the room. Mm. You always have to be in the room. And what I mean that is, like, you know, I remember a comedian saying to me, like, there's a tough enough audience, and she said to me, I'm just going to plow on with the jokes and I don't care if they don't laugh or not. And I didn't say it to her, but I was like, you can't do that. You have to acknowledge the audience in front of you. It's a funny conversation. That's what stand-up is. Mm. So to allow a conversation to happen, you know, you have to kind of acknowledge the energies in front of you. And but what I did, I supported Tommy Tiernan for 2 years, and I learned so much from him. Like, I was a completely different comedian at the end of it. And like, he didn't even tell me a thing. He was kind of like, you know, do you know that metaphor? You know, give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day, but teach a man how to fish and he'll fish for life. You know, I was kind of thinking, like, just watching him, and he'd suggest things. It's really clever. He'd suggest things to me, and he did breathing exercises. As you can see, I'm naturally high octane. And so I used to struggle with that on stage. Do you know, I wouldn't be in the room. I mean, you go, we were talking about energies at the start, and, you know, an audience on a Monday night might do a charity gig, and the energy wouldn't be there. And I'd come on at the top like I'm, you know, like I'm, you know, like I'm the superstar comedian, and no one gives a shit. And I wasn't in the room, and I learned how to do breathing exercises. These breathing exercises, and it's that Tommy did, and what it did was it just relaxed me so much that I was, when I went on stage, I was in control of my own breath. I could, so if someone heckled me, I could take time to take a beat. And it also helped with my phrasing. You know, I'd be stuttering my grammar and stuff like that because I'd be so high octane and fast. I got control of that. And just to be incomplete, because you know, if you're not prepared for something or you're too nervous, you will try and get to the end of it as quick as you can. Like, if you give a presentation and you're not, you kind of don't know it, you're kind of hoping this will finish as quick as it can, and you don't want to be there. And you will speak faster and more awkward and nervous. So to break that, and I remember asking Tommy about timing, is that I've been looking at your timing recently, and it's so good, and how do you do it? And he said, it's breathing. It's just breathing. It's just being in control of the room. And even the way I'm talking now, do you know what I mean? I never would have been able to be like that a few years ago. So it's just having complete control of yourself. Like, I go on stage now, and at the first 10 minutes, do you know, the first 10 seconds, I try to get my first joke a lot of the time. If I'm doing club comedy, I'll try and get it under the first 20 seconds. Do you know, like, I'll walk on stage, and I'll say, I used to walk on stage and I go, oh God, do you know, I remember doing it one night in Tala, and I was like, oh, hello Tala, do you know what, I thought it'd be among strangers, but I recognise a good few of you from Tinder already. Oh, thank God for that. And then there'd be a woman up the front, and I pretend her name's Siobhan. How are you, Siobhan? How are you doing? It's a bit awkward. And then Tala, her name actually was Siobhan, and the boyfriend went mental. I was like, whoa, it's just mad coincidence, relax, do you know, it's just mad coincidence.
Yeah.
But even in those 20 seconds at the top, I'll still give myself time to relax and breathe and let the room acknowledge you. Let them acknowledge you. And, you know, say, hello, how are you? And then work it in. Because, you know, it's like if you're in charge of health and safety and there's a fire in the second floor and you're in the third floor, you know, you want the lad to go, okay, could everyone just casually, everything's fine, just kind of go down. You don't want the lad going, there's a fucking fire, get the fuck down. Panic. And you've lost him. Yeah. You've lost him. So just breathing was essential for me, like, to learn that. And so I'll always give myself 10 minutes before a gig. Even I remember doing Dermot and Dave, we were gigging in Kilkenny, 3,000 at the gig. and there's a big black curtain, and I was just the other side, about to go on stage, just breathing, meditating for 10 minutes, and then going out and giving the same pace than I would have if there was four people in the audience.
Yeah.
So I do get nervous, but breathing helps. Thanks for asking.
Good no.
No, it's
good
great advice. Yeah. It is, it's great advice.
How did you get the MC and Tommy's gig in the,
very lucky,
on the show?
It's just when I was on the road with him. I think I was with him the day he came up with the idea. And we laughed. It was a car journey back from Cookstown. I wasn't driving back then when I was supporting him. So I was always in the passenger seat, which is great. Like, you know, great chats. And but I do remember him talking about it. Nothing to me. Wouldn't it be funny if you did a show? I think this happened. I might be wrong.
It's how you remember.
But, yeah, exactly. And then he goes, Fred, will you do it? No, you do it, Tommy. I think that happened anyway. And he said, would it be funny if you just did a show and you didn't know who the guests are? They just walked out. Like, you might know who they are, but you don't know who's going to walk out.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of lucky, because then he asked me, would I MC it? It was just timing, just luck. That's all it was. Do you know? And it's great crack. I love doing it. Do you know? And you kind of meet, who's the Liverpool footballer with the mustache? And he's 80s.
Ian Rush.
Another one.
John Aldridge.
John Aldridge was on the show. And I was thinking, odd, because Tommy's a massive Liverpool fan, and he's got a season tickets and all that. And I was like, Tommy's going to lose the plot when John Aldridge walks out. And then he walked out. It's Tommy Tiernan. He knew him. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they were mates. Yeah. It was always like, here, did you get home okay there last month when I was talking? You know what I mean? That's how the conversation started. Yeah. So it's very exciting.
I think you could probably nearly forget how big Tommy is.
Yeah.
By 100%. Situations like that.
But you know what's mad? Because when you see him on the show and he's very like spiritual and philosophical.
Yeah, yeah.
The way he sits and he has his monkey hat on, he's like bit into it. Yeah. You see him on the stage and he's bouncing around.
I know.
And he's just making monkey noises and all. And you're like, how are you so sophisticated? Yeah. Was so wild then in your craft.
Yeah.
It's meant.
That's
I've
a great
only
observation, because it's so true. Like, it's
I've
so
only
true.
Ever seen him once.
Yeah.
I heard about him years ago, obviously. Like, growing up, my dad used to always talk about him.
Yeah,
and then, like, he went on a bit of a hiatus for a while, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then that's obviously when I was getting into like comedy then. So he wasn't really on my radar. Then he comes back with this show. He's on the telly all the time. And you see, and the interviews are unbelievable.
Yeah,
fucking great interviews.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went to see him and he's just bouncing around saying mad shit. Like, literally just like going bing, bong, bong. And people are in tears laughing, and
that's why there's no phones in the audience.
Yeah,
because it's wild.
But like, literally, what? Like, it's a fully grown man just making noises, and people are. And I was like, "What? That's not the fellow off the telly."
I know what you're saying.
Don't get me wrong. He did do some brilliant bits and tell some hilarious stories. But like, there was moments where he's just making noises, and I was like, "That's not the same fella."
Yeah, completely. And even in the show itself, I know like how can adjust the energy levels. I wouldn't mention names here, but like we had a group on, we had the Walpers, they were great. It's been out, you know, and it was such a crack interview. It was a good laugh, you know, these lads from Dundalk. Hope they don't listen to the start of this podcast. But you know, it was such a laugh. You know, I was really enjoying it myself, and because I get the full unedited interviews.
Yeah,
I get it all, like, and they can go on for an hour and 10, hour and 20 sometimes. And then like there's a 10-minute break, and this lady came on after who was abused. Like, you know, it was really harrowing, and it hadn't been that long. And so Tommy has to go from pub banter to listening, you know, and his concentration is amazing, you know, and the attention span, and knowing what to do, you know, and what the right things to say, like, you know, I don't know how we can do that. Adjust, you know, it's great.
Especially if you don't know the person as well, and you're going to be like, so what are you on? And then they tell you, and you're right. Whereas like,
exactly, now I need to be gentle and careful after being nuts for the last time. Like, it's a skill in itself, that.
I think we should do what the next live show. Just be like, hell, use all sorts of guests out there, and me and Terry will.
Three random people.
I
would. Do you know what? I'd love one of the guests to be that.
Yeah.
Just random.
Wild card.
But be disrespectful now, wouldn't they, if they came out and like, we're like, so here were you. Imagine if they were big. Yeah, but where cunts for that carving?
Could you imagine?
It happens to Tommy Tiernan.
Yeah.
It happened to anyone.
Does it happen?
Yeah, he just had people on, he doesn't know who they are. Yeah, everyone, well, technically he doesn't know who's going to be on, but like some people doesn't know who they are and has to get into it with them.
We don't do celebrity either. We do celebrity. Like,
is that Roy Keane?
I know what you're saying.
Much bigger than that in Irish celebrities.
I'm sorry. We do celebrity, but it's not our, like, we don't go, you know, I mean, we do, like, what I heard was it was hard to get Roy Keane, and it was on the, it's not that he didn't want to do it, it's just availability.
Yeah.
It's just off, you know, and so when Roy, but there's other acts as well, like, you know, it's not, we had another guy that he was a professor in Trinity, and is he used to lecture on a modern classic, the antiquity, is that what you call it? Like, you know, from the, and that was a special thing. And I was like, good luck to you, Tommy. You know what I mean? Like, and it was a brilliant interview. It was a brilliant interview. You know, he takes his time breathing. Yeah. See, he takes his time, he breathes and he doesn't rush it. And so you're right. He can just, but we don't, I remember being Glenn Hansard.
Yeah.
And we also had the two Norries, one of the two Norries.
Yeah, James.
Before they did the podcast.
Yeah, that's my first exposure to him.
Is it?
And I remember thinking that was like, that was back when I used to watch the show all the time. And I remember watching that being gripped.
Yeah.
Like, what a fucking story.
Yeah. How many people talked about Glenn Hansard the next day?
Yeah.
Not too many. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was all about that.
Yeah.
So that's what this show allows it to do.
I suppose if it did happen to us then, it does open us up. It's like, right, how do you find out the most about one person in the shortest amount of time? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's the first thing you want to say to this person? Who are you? And you could be like, I'm Fred Cook. And you'd be like, all right, Fred, what do you do? Yeah. And you'd be like, right, I'm a comedian. And like, right, we're off to the races now.
Yeah.
How did you get into that? Where are you from? Why comedy? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, but the thing is, it's going to be like, what, wherever, so many hundred people there watching that in real time happening.
Yeah. You know what I mean? There's no audience now.
No.
No, the audience is gone. Yeah. Because I used to do the
warm-up. So you were out of gig then?
I nearly thought it was. You know, I'm kind of, I nearly thought it was. Thankfully, I still have it. Do you know what I mean? Like, but I was kind of thinking I might need it. Do you know, but Tommy says he needed cadence. You know, for those energy levels, from crack to serious. You need, and I never, when I'm introducing someone, I try and give the same pitch. You know what I mean? Because if it's Pat Short, you know what I mean? Like, if there's a comedian and Tommy doesn't know it's a comedian, do you know, for example, if he never knew who Pat Short was, if I went, oh, it's Pat Short, Tommy, do you know, he knows this lad's fine, it's not serious. Do you know what I mean? So you kind of have to keep it neutral for each person.
Yeah.
But it's just a cadence. So you can start again. Do you know, a visual cadence for the audience at home. Like.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We're very lucky to have it.
Are we doing it?
Right, let's do a next live show.
Don't tell me.
Guess that we don't know who.
If you start doing the Tommy Tiernan show, don't tell me. Don't tell me. Because I'm not meant to know.
No, we're not
doing the Tommy Tiernan. We're gonna do the Tommy Tiernan show.
Right. Oh, it'll be great.
So we have a live show coming up. Actually, the big announcement is all the details will be out on next week's bonus episode on Tuesday morning.
Right,
do you like that one?
I was, yeah. And when you said we're going to announce something today, I was like,
we're announcing the announcement.
that's like someone you fancy coming up to you going, listen, I don't know if I love you yet, but I'll let you know next week. You're leaving us hanging. Come on.
You have to reel them in.
Fred, you have a tour coming up.
I do, Clown to Earth. And so that's the name of the show.
That has to be the best thing about being a comedian, just coming up with the names of the show.
Oh yeah, I've really outdone myself. The best one I came up with was Ready Freddy Cook.
Yeah.
And I was delighted with that. The only problem was the PR actually thought she wrote down Ready Steady Cook and sent it to, you know, all the podcasts and Today FM, so people thought it was a cooking show.
Yeah.
Do you know, so
there might be something in it. There might be something in a photo down the line.
Yeah. Can Cook Fred Cook or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe. And but that is the thing you kind of do. You kind of, all comedians do it. You just come up with an open title that says nothing. You know, I was actually going to call the show Father Fred, but then I was thinking that's too specific.
Yeah.
And it's put me in a specific area. Do you know? So I said, no, Clown to Earth is it kind of works, doesn't it? Like, so.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And where can people get tickets for it?
You can get tickets on Ticketmaster. My big show now in Dublin is Liberty Hall.
Really?
So, so I can't wait for that. It's on Valentine's night, February the 14th.
There you go. So, Friday night.
Yeah, exactly. If you're your partner, your dating partner, you know, you feel there's not enough erasmatas in the comical sense, because that's all I can help you with, I'm afraid. So you're more than welcome, and single people as well, of course. So.
Yeah, you don't discriminate.
No. What are you doing here, lonely man? Yeah. You know? Get out.
Yeah.
So, but I can tickets are flying. But you know, I'm so looking forward to doing that show, and I'm also in Dolans in Limerick, which I was last year. So it's my job to come back with new material all the time. City Limits in Cork as well, Clears in Kilkenny. So, you know, these are the, I have a Galway date, but I'm a bit like yourself. It's a bit like, I have a Galway date, but keep listening in, keep following me on Instagram because I haven't got the official date yet.
Yeah. Come back next year and then it'll be Fred again.
Oh, very good.
There you go. You can have that one for free. You can have that one for free.
I was on with Jennifer Zamparelli once. She used to do this thing called Maid States. Remember that? And Jennifer, when she was on the morning show, and she said, and she went, we've got Fred again. As in me in front of her, sitting in front of her, and then she had to crack herself. Not the band as well.
People just tuned out then, folks.
But that would happen. Fred Again's a great title. Yeah. I wish I'd come up with that. I probably, you know.
What do you mean? Wish you can have it?
Oh, thanks.
You can have it. Don't be worrying about it.
Yeah. Can we change the title to Tour Now? Like, so, yeah, no, definitely.
Just one thing I wanted to call it out on, Fred. You learned how to drive when you're 35.
Yeah, well done. Jesus.
You told me else.
Research, yeah. You didn't let me finish.
Oh, because I didn't want to come across as a stalker.
Yeah. God bless your memory.
You told me else. We had a good conversation there outside. He's like, I learned to drive when I was 35. It was a quack.
And you drive, we were saying, I'm like you as well, a driving situation. I always say it's the opposite. My driving situation is the opposite of my sex life, that it should be automatic, but it's manual.
Very good.
But you're an automatic driver as well, aren't you?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Are you manual?
No, I don't drive.
You don't drive?
No.
He was getting into it. He was going to get into it, weren't
he? Yeah, and all the test stuff and all that. Not yet.
But you've 7 years.
Yeah, to catch you. Yeah. Before I'm 35, I'm grand.
But you see, you love Dublin, don't you? Do you need to drive?
No.
You don't need to.
For pure luxury.
Yeah, like drive to Sligo or Kerry or somewhere. Exactly.
He's not meeting any board from like Kerry or that, and moved down there and he comes in.
Drag
them. Yes, I hope not. And, it was kind of, it's great. The freedom is incredible.
That's what everyone says, but no, I don't need it.
You might get a shower over this fella did.
I did, yeah.
What was that? Operation Transformation?
Transportation.
Oh, sorry.
That's the best bit of the show. The title.
Passed that test in the end, though, no?
Second time around.
Did you, failed the first time?
I failed it on the show. I did a show. I gave myself 1 month to learn how to drive, do you know, and the driver instructor. For when it comes to, like, the problem was on a provisional, you need to have a qualified driver beside you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And
so I had my dad.
He said it takes 40 hours of driving.
So I was really cutting it fine. And I failed it so bad. Like hilariously, like that. There was people in the driving test, and we weren't allowed to film it. Do you know? But I was the guy giving me the exam. Do you know when you get the test? He's got his brakes and on his side as well. And at one stage, you went, for fuck's sake, and put down the brakes. And I was like, what you doing that for? It's a roundabout up here. What you doing that for? You know. And
tell the truth. Did you fail on purpose to get a season two? You'd be like, passing season two.
I did my test on an automatic.
Yeah.
And on the car that I bought on the show. So I passed it the second time.
Spoiler alert, yeah.
The funny thing is, and be careful for country people living in the city, that I did my test in Navan and it was 8:30 on a Sunday morning. When I did pass it, there wasn't a sight to be seen. Like, you know, like you might see crows on the road and like they know how to fly away pretty quickly. So I passed it. And then the next day I was driving around Dublin City on a Monday, panicking. Do you know what I mean? Like, because to go from that to that, you know, I even said to my driving instructor, I don't know how to use motorways.
Yeah.
Do you know? And she was like, listen, you're passed now, but I can go down the motorways, which if you want. So there's this massive thing.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to get. It's a bit like comedy. You need stage time, but we need road time.
Yeah.
But, you know, on a provisional.
You're not allowed on the motorway on a provisional.
Oh, completely, yeah.
It makes no sense.
Yeah. Fred, I think we're at the end. People know where to get the tickets for this tour coming up. And best of luck with it. Thanks very much for coming in,
guys. I tell you what Because I love you so much. I'm going to give you tickets for my Liberty Hall show. It's been such a pleasure to get on this show. You know, I've seen Eric and I've seen Will on it as well.
Yeah,
another guy.
They're never off it.
Exactly. Yeah. So thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for coming in, Fred.
And before we wrap up, a big shout out to our sponsor, FBT.
FBT gyms are the best in the business, giving you so much more than your average gym.
Join us in a supportive environment dedicated to helping you achieve your fitness goals with locations in Swords, Keulock, Drogheda and now Tallaght.
Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned athlete, FBT provide the resources, motivation and expertise to empower your fitness journey. Unleash your potential at FBT gyms for only €44 a month with no contract and full class access. Sign up now at fbtgyms.ie today. Wrap this one up. Take us out, Siobhan.
Boom.
Talking Bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your fitness potential with no contract and full class access. fbtgyms.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Fill your body up. Walk it hard and low. When you finish that.
The Hypnocker.